Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Debrief. It's Dave O'Neill here, my COVID editions, and I thought, why not ring someone in another state? We spoke to Mandy Nolan in Northern New South Wales. What about WA? How are they going? And I thought none other than Wolfie, well, an absolute legend in comedy in my eyes. I don't know, most people listening won't know who he is, but I tell you, he is an absolute cracker. So I'm going to ring him, give him a call. Why not?
Mate, how you going?
Wolfie, yeah, I'm good.
Going for a drive, do a little gig, then drive back, back with the chat. It's called The Debrief. It's called The Debrief. It's called The Debrief. It's called The Debrief. It's called The Debrief.
Mate, we're live. Are we straight on?
We're straight on, mate. We're straight on. That's how I roll.
Mate, well, you know what? You don't want to miss a zinger. I tried to send you that yesterday. Trying to say I'm doing weddings and garden bars and all sorts, and you're like, ha, funny.
Yeah.
But I only wrote that. I wrote that in passing, mate. I'm not normally that type of guy.
No, but you're fair enough. You're in WA and you're actually doing live gigs. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, we are doing them, but not well. You know, like because we're not doing the midweek gigs, so we're only doing weekends.
Why is that?
Well, I think with JobKeeper, like, there's an incentive to keep some of these bar staff off. Like, I think on the weekends they get big, but like for the open mics on a weeknight, they probably only get 40 down. And I think JobKeeper's actually more lucrative. Well, that's what I've been told.
So yeah, right.
I think people are gaming the government out here. They're like, oh, we'll do it on the big nights, and then the others they take the handouts. So we have these big lulls. Do you know what I mean? So it's not all it's cracked up to be, because my anxiety's through the roof. You know, I do a gig every 2 weeks. It's just enough to keep you frazzled.
Yeah, right. And so just the weekends, are they big crowds on the weekends, or do they have to socially distance?
Well, the thing is, they're meant to socially distance, but things seem to be blurring. Do you know? Yeah. They're getting closer and closer together. I'm like, hang on, this is now like a fire hazard. Do you know? Yeah. It's packed in here. And I'm like, I think we've still got 2 meter gaps, but I'm like, there's not even a 2 meter gap between me and people off the stage. Do you know? Yeah. I'm like, they're rammed in there. So I don't know what's going on.
Because Perth has been one of the least hit places, hasn't it? There's not many cases in Perth.
Well, this is the thing, mate. But we're the most isolated city. So, I mean, we've got one road coming in here. So we're all congratulating each other. But I think there's only 3 people came in to deliver bread, you know, once a day, and that's it. No one else comes here. So it's a bit like New Zealand, you know? They were slapping each other in the back, and I'm like, it's that Hobbit land. You know, they're pretty safe out there, to be honest.
Yeah, right. But people must appreciate you doing gigs, though. They're happy. I'm banking on the fact that I haven't done a gig for a while, but when I do come back, they'll be happy to see you.
Mate, it is so supportive. It's like a charity thing. They're clapping and hooting, and it's just everyone's just doing COVID material.
Yeah.
And the thing was, the COVID material was going well until Melbourne went back into lockdown, and now it's a bit on the nose, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think things turned sour. I think we had a period where we thought we were out of the woods, and then once what happened to Melbourne, I think suddenly your little jokes, your throwaway lines weren't hitting quite as well.
Anyone doing any Wuhan bat material?
Mate, they're all doing Wuhan bat.
Okay.
There are people dressed as bats. There's act outs. the whole game. You know what the thing is? I love the way that in isolation you think you generate an original idea.
Yeah.
And then you watch 3 acts and you're like, they've gone through my notes.
Yeah.
How have they got this take? And I'm like, oh, it's pretty obvious. Do you know, like that loo roll thing was unbelievable. Like,
well,
single person.
I've got a bat. I do Zoom gigs now. I do. I've done quite a few now. And I've got one of the kids had a soft toy bat. And so I have it in the background. And then I occasionally, what's that thing? Oh, that's my Wuhan. That's the Wuhan. He's living with me now. He's like Julian Assange. He's like, he's sought refuge. He's like the Wuhan bat, mate. And I've done gigs with Husey on. So he's like, no one, everyone's forgotten about the bat. Everyone's forgotten. Well, what happened to the bat? It's like, yeah, the bat was the star at the start, and everyone forgot about him. So
it has lost, the origin story. It was all from that bat.
Him and that pangololi.
And now, you know, the history's
Pangan
Now they're saying it's cruise ships, but it was always that bat, wasn't
it? Yeah. Well, I mean,
I actually now think it was Carnival Cruises, and I've realised, no, it was a bat in China. The story's changed. You thought it was like 90-year-olds on slip and slides on a Carnival cruise, but it's come from that Wuhan, right?
Now, I'm trying to remember where I first met you. I know where I first met you. Because, I mean, the Dum Dum Club. So we did a podcast and Carl put me with you and he described you as even looser than Kappa, which is Nick Kappa. And that was you. But then he added, but he's had like a full-on job and he's got kids.
I was I'm a loose Kappa with responsibilities. Do you know what I mean? I've got loose ends that I should have tied up. Proper job and finance and actual kids. So
where did you start comedy? You would have started around the same time as Kappa, wouldn't you? Like 10 years ago?
We did, actually. Kappa had started before me. I remember my very first gig. He was running it, him and another guy. And it was a bully vibe. I remember asking, like, who runs this gig? And they said, oh, no idea.
Really?
And then he proceeded to MC. Do you know what I mean? Like, they were not welcoming. I still remember this story.
They weren't welcome.
I actually asked Kappa, who runs this gig? He said, no idea, mate, and walked off. And then 10 minutes later, he was on stage calling my name. And I was like, what a welcome.
Well, it's hard starting comedy because no one's really friendly to you.
You know what the problem is? There's so many people that come through. Like that room was a crappy room and there was a lot of annoying people. Do you know what I mean?
The open mic level. People. Yeah, there's a lot, for want of a better term, there's a lot of fuckheads. You know what I mean? Like,
mate, this is 100%. It was like my ex, her sister had a lot of boyfriends.
Yeah.
And the first few, you know, you come around for dinner, you put in a big effort. But once you got to about the 12th guy, you were like, you know what? I'm going to give this 3 months and see what happens. You know, I've invested in too many golf games. I've gone to the footy with random guys and I'm the one. I check Facebook a week later. I'm the only one that's friends with them. I haven't been updated. It's all collapsed.
You know, then she would get angry if you were still friends. Why are you still friends with Gary? I broke up with him. Oh, okay.
I'm like, I've got to go fishing with him. I didn't know it was broken up. I'm going to Rottnest. I'm doing a 2-day trip with this guy.
Getting a holiday to Bali with the kids. I thought he was a great guy.
Mate, I did so much of that.
Oh,
it's unbelievable. And then you feel bad, but I reckon that's exactly what happens with comedy. Then I'd be on Christmas and they'd be saying, you're being rude to him. And I'm like, look, I've learned my lesson. Hey,
yeah.
I'll wait until I see some commitment. I need to see a ring before I even say hello.
How long ago did you start comedy? 10 years? Would it be about 10?
Yeah, it was 10, hey? 2012.
Wow. That's not 10. But anyway.
It's a long time, hey? And I've got
Not that long.
Because I haven't made any progress, I've got all the excuses. I'm like, I did Raw, but then I had some time off, and then my boss stopped me for a bit. Do you know people are like, whenever you haven't got a profile enough, you've got reasons? I'm like, 2013 to 2014, probably not as many gigs as I'd like, you know? It's like, own what's happened, mate.
I did Raw. The judge didn't like me. He had some against me. I was great.
Mate, I screwed up on Raw because I think I was competitive. I remember the result, and I got drunk, and I was I didn't take it well. Do you know? Because you're early on, and I thought this was it. And do you know what I mean? I thought the whole world had collapsed. So I was fuming. Do you know, then you're lashing out and you act, I had a tantrum. I couldn't believe it.
You know what I say about comedy? I say this about all competitions. They're all shit until you win one, then they're all right. You know what I mean? Like, I don't rate them at all. Until you win one, then you're like, oh, no, they're great. Well, they're okay.
Yeah, the only award that matters is one that you've got. And you know what the best is? Once you've got one, you're still disparaging of it.
Like, yes.
I tell people Raw's a waste of time and this and that. And it was actually, I remember when I was trying to get into that national final, it was everything.
Yeah.
But then once I got it, I go, it wrecked me. I could have been, I was doing 1 hour Hicks type style stuff. I was coming good. Then I come and do this bloody comp and, you know, put a dampener on my progress. It was like, you take everything for granted, hey, once you got it.
Did you do the national final? Did you do it?
I was in there, hey. Thornton was, Dave Thornton was the host.
Who won that year?
It was Lessons for Lewis.
Yes. Oh, okay. I was going to say, I've never heard of them, but I know them. Yeah, they're funny.
Mate,
yeah.
I like those guys.
Yeah, they're funny.
The thing was, you know what? The thing is, when you're early on, you only have your view of comedy. You don't realise that there's many ways to do it.
And that's right.
They were very original. And then when I reflect back on what I was doing, it was dog shit. Do you know? I mean, it's just
good enough to get into the final. That's still good.
But you know, you think you've got a new take, but you're basically a guy in a pleather jacket and a leather jacket ranting about capitalism and money. Yeah. Money's a construct, and you're like, you don't have a clue what you're doing. And then you're like, of course these other acts won. Like they're doing something different. Like I've obviously just been YouTubing like an edgy comic, no place in going anywhere.
Now, what was your? I know you're still working in finance, which is alarming. Yep. But what was your? You had a full-on job in London, didn't you? Is that right? That's what you told me.
Mate, I was global head of risk. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
I was the buck stopped with me. I was the head of the risk department for it was Gulliver's Travels. It's GTA. It's become Keone.
Right.
They got taken over, but they're very big. Hey, they're the back arm of like Flight Center. If you book a hotel,
yeah,
the platform was GTA.
Oh, okay. And so that would be a very, so you were a very full on London, like one of those guys, like a Wall Street kind of guy, were you?
Sort of, mate. I was, hey. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was in there. I was managing teams. I used to travel around and do the risk stuff. Do you know what I mean? I would go into little companies and work out what the risk was. And I think one of the big risks was me.
Did you? Yes. Have you seen Succession? That TV show Succession, where they take over companies. It's a great show. Have you seen Succession?
No, I haven't. Oh, hey, I think I'd like it.
It's based on the Murdoch family. But anyway, they take over companies, and one of the sons has to go into this hipster company and just stand on the desk and go, "Oh, you guys are fired! Yeah, you're all. Did you do that stuff? You're all fired."
Mate, I did stuff like that. Oh. Hey, I had employees that worked for me, and because I don't know if I can communicate that well. Often they wouldn't even have anything on. I thought, oh, you know what? It's easier just for me to do it than explain it, because I got frustrated. You know, there was one guy that worked there, and He worked with me for maybe, well, 7 years, and I don't remember giving him any work, but he always looked busy. I honestly gave him nothing. And I was like, what is he doing? He looks busier than me.
Yeah.
And he was updating his LinkedIn and his CV another year. And the thing is, he had been a serial bounce around. Do you know, I think once you've been in an organization too long, you can't really get rid of them.
Yeah, right.
Because the redundancy's too big. So you end up just a pot plant. It's like,
it's like a public service thing. Yeah, right.
Well, you know what I mean? Because the payout is too huge. It's like he's been there for sort of 20 odd years. And they're like, look, it's better that he's just sort of like in the breakout room, like a beanbag, just sit there. So then I did a good service to him. I sent him to his home country. He went there. I'm not sure what the hell he did, but he caught up with all his family. And
yeah, that's all right.
I teed that up as payback.
Why did you get into comedy then? I mean, that's obviously a very lucrative job, stressful. Then why did you get into comedy?
Well, do you know, I always wanted to do it. I suppose the better question was, why did I get into accounting? And I think it's, you know, that cowardice. Like I would have preferred to have done creative stuff. Do you know what I mean? It was a series of bad decisions.
Were your mum and dad in that area of work?
Yeah. It's sort of like the trade. You know, if you're in Newcastle and you end up a minor, we've got a series of finance accounting background.
Yeah.
So if I didn't raise my hand and say I'm going to be like I'm Billy Elliot, I'm going to be a dancer, I was going to the coal mine. So every decision became like, you know, I'll just do your commerce. And I'm like, okay, I'll just do it. It's fine. Do you know? And then you've got an accounting finance degree. And then you're like, okay, well, I want some time off. And then it's like, I'll just get your CA. It'll be fine. And do you know what I mean? And this too shall pass. And then you're suddenly, you know, global head of risk sitting around. I don't know how it happened. But to be honest, it was a bit of a loophole, because I don't know if I would have made it up like through financial controller and that sort of thing, because that's much more meticulous. You know, you have to get the numbers right. Mine was more Sarbanes-Oxley, which was stuff out of that, you know, the GFC and the collapse there and this and that. They put all those controls in. So mine was a great loophole for me, because I'm not good with numbers. This is the big – I'm only good at concepts.
Yes.
You know, like
yeah, I know what
I
you
can
mean.
Explain how to reconcile the lunch –
Yeah, but
you know, the canteen.
If you,
but if you give me coins, I'll lose track.
Yeah,
so,
but if you're Gordon Gekko type, you employ a nerd to do that stuff. You'd employ a numbers guy that you trust with your life, and then he'd steal from you. That's what always happens.
Well, this is 100%. So I was able theoretically to say, look, don't let that person take this money. Don't do that. But if anyone actually asked me to add up the till, no idea. Do you know what I mean? But I'm good at high-level concepts. So it was actually a great loophole for me, because what they needed people was to go into the company and find why things weren't working, but you didn't actually have to do it. And that's actually where I'm good. Like on a higher level, I can go, Cheryl shouldn't have the key to the safe. What's going on? Do you know, just... I'm like, she's skipping in. You
not
can
Cheryl.
See it. Look at her smile. She's loaded. She left in a Porsche. Come on. She's minor. She's low level payroll.
Have a look.
She's got a holiday house. What are you thinking?
But so you grew up in Perth though, did you? You're in Perth now, but you grew up in Perth. Then you moved to London, Sydney. You started comedy in Sydney. Is that right?
Yeah, I did one open mic in London.
Oh, wow.
Before I left, gong show.
Oh,
and it was as bad as you imagine. Oh, they gonged me off immediately. They didn't like what they saw. I didn't like what I saw. I ended up ranting at them, yelling.
Yeah, great.
I had the ego, you know, because you worked in finance a bit, do you know? So I thought I was right.
But... Yeah, you big ego. Were you wearing a suit and had your hair slicked back?
No, I actually did wear a suit early on, but not good. You know what I mean? Because I think it's like the theatre arts or those types where you have this entitlement. I thought I deserve their attention, and you'd go in there and just – it's great, man. Comedy's good for humbling you, hey?
Oh, yeah. Put me back. Oh, absolutely.
I had no place being the head of Riff, and now I'm back where I belong, at the bottom of the stack heap, working my way up.
And so you came back to Perth, and I remember you moved back your marriage broke down, and you moved in with your mum back to your mum and dad's house with your kids.
Yeah, mate, this is it. I'm running a broking firm from my parents' house, basically. So I don't know. I don't think it bodes well for clients. But the thing was, it was amazing, hey, because I had that time in London, and then I was traveling everywhere with this Global Socks. Yeah. And then I thought, look, let me get into stockbroking. And I did some period in like a boiler room, effectively.
Oh, great.
Exactly like Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah. And then rolled across from there and set up my own firm. And as with all these things, it started off so well. It was cruising along. And then it was the classic Icarus story. Do you know?
Too
the
close
wings,
to the sun, yeah.
Too close to the sun. I started eyeing off. I had this nice place in Netherlands, and I started eyeing off. Like I was like, I need a pool house. It just makes sense. And I need a pool house by November. And do you know, I started to play more and more risky because for the first 4 years of the business, it was all up. Hey, like the returns were unbelievable. People thought I had some sort of gift, but it turns out I might have just had bipolar and a delusion. Hey.
To be honest,
I think it was a lot of the failing of the business was coming back to Perth. Like I didn't really want to be here.
Are you in your
Still
old
don't.
Room? Are you in your old room? Your old bedroom?
No, I'm in my sister's and realized she had a better setup.
Yeah.
My room sucked. I'm facing the rising sun in the morning and it's hot.
Yeah.
There's no tinting on there and it's the smaller room. I realized no wonder my sister did so much better than me in school. My brother and sister had the best. I had the worst room in the house.
Oh, mate, my twin brother, I shared a room with my twin brother. We had a desk between the beds, a single bed. He got the desk. I had to do my homework on the billiard table in the rumpus room.
Mate, this is the thing.
This sets you up for a lifetime of failure. He lives in Switzerland now. He was an international delegate for the Red Cross. And so no wonder he's doing that, and I'm here. But anyway.
Mate, you're in there. You could only take notes down on your lap.
Yes.
Like you could only ever be a dinner lady. Like you didn't have a desk. Like you might have been head of risk.
I think I was the first ever hot desker in my house.
But I must say, it's funny though, because I used to growing up, I blamed my sister and she had everything in there. And I realized it definitely helped.
Yeah, but what does she do now? I came back. What does she do now, your sister?
Oh, she's high up in
I love that term, high up.
She's high up.
One of my friends used to say that. She said, my friend's going out with someone from the railways. And then she added, he's high up in the railways.
Do you know, I love it because people also do it unconsciously. They go, he's just. Like they'll say their dad and go, oh, he's just.
Yeah.
And I'm like, mate, it annoys me. Do you know a postman, yeah. And I'm like, "Why? Yeah, what are you doing? Like, why'd you say that? Do you know, it's so nasty."
She in finance as well?
No, she's HR.
Oh god!
So it's even more. Ooh. I don't know what they do.
Oh, they just
sort of whisper in your ear and tell you everything's going to be all right.
Take notes on people, sack people, hire people. It's one of those. When I worked in an office, admittingly 35 years ago now, there was no HR department. It was just it's been one of those industries that's been created.
Mate, this is the thing. You know what HR used to be? It was a few balloons and a cake in the breakout room.
That the receptionist or the secretary of the boss would organise. They used to do the HR.
She'll just get you a cake and go, "Look, you're not getting a pay rise, but we got a great mud cake from Woolies.
Yeah.
And that can tide you through. Help yourself to seconds for life." And you're like, "Well, can you just pay my super?" And they're like, "Look, we'll get some muffins in. It's going to be fine."
Oh, makes me
laugh. I can't imagine you in an office. What sort of job were you doing?
I know. So I did teaching, then I did public relations, and then which is an arts degree, and I got a job at Red Cross where I got my brother his first job in Red Cross because we didn't even have computers. It was so long ago. It was like mid-80s. And I saw this job come across my desk. And I said to my brother, "You should apply for it," because he was another arts graduate like me. And he applied for the Red Cross job, and he stayed at the Red Cross, and he eventually went overseas and went to Switzerland. And so I worked in the Red Cross as what was called a field officer. It was like a public education job. So I'd go around and give talks about the Red Cross. That was my job.
Yeah.
But it was good fun. Yeah. Because every other field officer didn't like public speaking. I loved it. So that's how
This was the early formation of your stand-up.
Yeah, so we would... you get asked by like a Rotary Club in Colac or wherever. It was all Victorian-based. And everyone would go, "Oh, who wants to talk to the Rotary Club in Colac?" I go, "I'll go. That'd be great. Got to stay overnight. You got a free meal." Hey. Yeah, it was great. I loved it.
You can always tell when you're that way inclined.
Yeah.
We were talking about it on another podcast. It's like the 21st speeches.
Oh, I love doing
them. Pulled in.
Yeah, I love
doing
them.
You're on a hot run.
Yeah.
You don't even know half the people and you're doing MC work and they're inviting you in. Do you know, you get in for free beers and then you do some crude speeches at a sort of keg party.
Yes. Randomly. Well, when I did PR, the public relations degree, there were a lot of... women, and so I go to all their 21st, and they say, "Do you want to make a speech, Dave?" "Yeah, why not? Give me the mic." And I just, that'd be great.
Mate, I remember I had a guy that he had his 21st, and no one wanted to speak, and I hardly knew him.
Yeah.
And I go, "Look, I'll say some words," and then you wander on, and I just basically did stand up.
Yeah.
I was talking about my experience at uni and how I'd picked up some girl and. Do you know what I mean? It's nothing to do with him.
No.
Arrogant.
I remember doing the uni, because these girls were at uni with me, and I'd say, "Because you know what uni's like? You got those really annoying people, otherwise known as mature age students," and everyone, you know, I was smashing it at the 21st.
Mate, that's a good joke. That would still kill.
Yeah,
mature age angle always kills.
Oh, I still do it, don't worry. I still do it.
Mate, do you still have jokes from your original set?
Yeah. Well, a lot of my stuff when I started, I used to talk about E Street, Neighbours, some of the police stuff that was going on at the time. There was a thing called Operation Noah. But I've got some pretty...
What was Noah? Was that like Stranger Danger?
Operation Kid? Operation Noah was a Victorian initiative to dob in a drug dealer and a drug smoker. And so my joke was that the guy I lived with was a stoner and he changed the dob and a drug dealer phone number to our number, so all these old ladies ring up our house and go, "I've got 100 marijuana plants next door." He's like, "Oh yeah, okay." I did a bit
of
that.
You can hook up with good dealers.
But I don't reckon I've got anything from my first five in my act. Have you got anything from...
I don't know. Hey, I think I've got like one or two.
Yeah.
Like when pushed, like if I have to do a long set, I need to grab whatever I can.
Oh, exactly.
I'm getting bubble gum from under that table, anything I can think of. But I think, do you know the sad moment is when you update a topical reference, where you grab an old joke and you change it from E Street to
Home and Away.
90210, then you update it. And the third visit, where you're like, okay, now it's Seventh Heaven.
Oh,
and,
I've done it. You do that thing. I remember doing jokes about Twilight when it was on in the movies, and then, "Hey, I saw Twilight on TV last night. Remember that movie?"
Mate, I love that. My favourite is the one that links to the Olympics. And you can see it's like a barometer. When the Olympics coming in, you feel the wave and the stadium claps. But then when they're about two years away from it, the stress of it, where they're going, the Olympics, and you know they've got to try crowbar in the Olympics as an idea.
The Gulf War was a classic one because that came around twice. And I remember Greg Fleet saying, "Oh, great, I can do my Gulf War stuff again."
Mate, well, this was the joy. Hey, you had Bush. Mm. Bush came in twice.
Yes.
And they're the exact same jokes because no one's learnt anything. Yep. This is what's good about politics. I've realised I've been raging online for years, and I can't recognise if anything's ever changed.
No.
Do you know, you're always arguing this party, that party, and I'm like, still my teeth are awful and not being fixed, you know? Like, no one's fixed my teeth, Dave. Like, it's the same today, no matter who I vote for. And I'm in there raging online.
Oh, yeah. I had a joke about Kevin Rudd. You know how he lost the prime ministership, but then he still turned up? He was still a member. And I said, in any other organisation, if that was Red Rooster, you know, someone would be ringing his mum going, Kevin's still here. He's, the manager would be ringing, you know. But then I could do that joke for Abbott. Abbott hung around too. He was hanging around for ages. So I just changed it to Abbott after
Kevin. But I always wonder, like, because people are, like, online, they're so aggressive. I can't even imagine being a politician.
Oh, it'd be
like,
terrible.
The amount of anger you get.
Yeah.
Do you know, just me as a bad driver, I cop trouble. Do you know, it's just down a Red Rooster there and a guy's yelling at me. I'm like, imagine if you had, like, tanked the economy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, imagine, like, you never get a rest.
No.
You'd be down just trying to get a sausage at Auskick.
Yelling crap at
you. And people just throwing hot meat into the back of your neck.
Oh, it's
like,
terrible.
How can they, they need to change countries. I don't feel like, but I suppose you get half the population like you.
Yes.
So you end up a hero.
Well, I mean, look at Joe Hockey left and Abbott's left now too. So they just go overseas. That's probably a good thing. Now, hey, I've got some questions. I ask everyone. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
What was the last thing you cooked? Do you cook for the kids? Do you cook for the kids? Yeah, you.
I do, actually. I do cook for them. I cook them sausage rolls. And I burnt my finger, and then I also, halfway through, it was last night, was unsure if that plastic thing was oven-proof. So I took them out, and then they're all sort of gnarled.
Now,
so,
you're living with your parents, so the kids are with their grandparents. And but is your mum cooking still for everyone? Has she just gone, fuck you, I'm not cooking. I cooked for you years ago, mate, Andrew. I'm not cooking for you again.
My mum's just sort of, this is how her mum is. She's just... The workload's just increased. She doesn't know why she's more stressed. Like, her memory's gone, and she's like, this laundry seems as worse as it ever was. And I'm like, well, you're doing it for more people than you ever have in your life. No, but the thing is, it's so hard with a mum because I try, but they're so efficient.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like,
I know.
You'll drop a towel, and you bend around, and then you turn around, and it's already hung.
Yeah.
And then they're like, you're an ass. You're not helping out. And I'm like, you literally have to never – you hang the towel before you even – dry yourself with it, otherwise you're beaten. And then also they get pedantic about stuff. Do you know, you hang the laundry but you haven't done it right.
Yeah, it's like
she's
got
the pegs the pegs. Certain way.
Yeah.
And she's like, the towels don't go on the north. They never face north, Andrew. What are you doing? Like, because they've built sort of these weird OCD like habits. So
yeah,
I try my hardest.
Fair
I didn't
enough.
Say that on the radio or onto you. Like, I really don't do a great deal, to be honest.
Well,
I just
busy.
Point to my depression. Whenever they try to get me to do something, I say, oh, I'm in a very dark place at the moment, you know.
And that works with them? Or do they...
No, I don't know. They think, well, he's down again. He's down again. Whenever there's a clean-up, he's suddenly down again.
Yeah.
Some laundry to be...
I don't know. Maybe the vacuum's a trigger for him. I don't know what happens.
The dishes. He always seems to get in
in a state because of the dishes.
Whenever the dishes are around, he says, "Oh, I'm feeling down again, Mum. Like, don't feel right."
Something happened in London. Something happened in London with some dishes. I think. I don't know. It was some sort of incident. So, what was the last thing you watched or listened to, Wolfie?
Me, I have. I don't know what I've been watching. Hey, I've been watching Billions a lot. Have you watched that show?
Yeah, I love Billions. Yeah, with the guy from Homeland, the redhead guy.
But you know what? I like it, but I think that's what pulled my stockbroking business apart because, do you know, I romanticized about what he was doing and I thought, oh, you need you need a billion, hey? You need a hedge fund. I was doing quite well, but you'd see, you know, this idea, this Hollywood idea of amount of money you needed. And I'm like, don't even have a helicopter. I mean, you know, need to up the ante.
What's his name? Axel.
And then, you know, you're starting acting like that. And you know what? It's like any, I think it's the same like the Australian mobsters that try copy, you know, they copy Scarface they end up in jail within about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Because it's not actually the way you do it when you cruise around in a Cadillac with guns and stuff. Yeah, and they want to act like Hollywood, and they're arrested within like a month, going like, mate, it's pretty obvious that you're a postman living in a mansion now, like you're going down.
With the great,
that's what happened to me.
Paul Giamatti, who plays the Attorney General, whatever he is, he's great. That guy, his enemy, Axelrod's enemy.
He's good. Hey, I thought he seemed a bit cartoonish. I thought he wouldn't be able to pull it off, but he's such a good actor. Good. He makes that show. Oh, those two are good actors.
They're very good. And the woman's very good too, who is from Sons of Anarchy.
I know, I like it. I was about to say the woman as well, which just seems so disparaging.
She was very good.
She's from Sons of Anarchy. Yeah, she's a great actor.
Yeah, from the Sons of Anarchy, the wife.
I'm no good with actors' names, hey? Like, I just recognize them as their role. I'm like, it's Axel.
It took me about 4 episodes to realize that he was in Homeland and she was in Sons of Anarchy. I look familiar with those guys. And his assistant, the guy with the little mustache, is from Breaking Bad. He's a Breaking Bad.
I know.
Bad
you know what the thing is? It's all acting's like clicky, hey?
Yeah.
You'd think you'd get a new role, but they're all mates.
Yeah.
A revolving cast. And then there's just one new boy, like I was that first day with Kappa, probably going like, where's the tea room, and bugger off.
I don't know who's running this gig. Hello and welcome to the night.
This is what happened. Yeah. I don't know who's running it. And it's my first gig. I'm panicking. I've got notes written on my hands. I'm panicked.
Fantastic.
I'm saying, can you please introduce me as Wolfie or Wolfo or some sort of, I've got it all strategized out. He says, I don't even know who runs this. And then he calls me from the stage. I'm like, Jesus, what? This is hazing. Hazing from the beginning.
And it was the last bit of human contact you had.
This is, that sounds sort of like
weird.
Illicit, hey? It sounds you're probing into my sex life, hey? No, you know what? Just mainly with, I can't even say it now. I was going to say my kids.
Yeah, you can say your kids.
Awful after the way I've set that up.
Human contact is not sexual. It's just like.
I know. Look, I've been isolated too long. I actually haven't. Mainly see my kids. Eh?
How old are the kids? How old are your kids now?
5 and 2.
Oh, Jesus. That's hard work.
I know.
Not even at school.
Mate, they're not. And, you know, you realize that second pair of hands helps a lot. Eh?
Oh,
do you know, when you're at the park, you're trying to teach one to ride and the other's learning to swim in the lake nearby.
Yeah,
do you know, and then you got to run.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, every time you're doing one, the other one's distracted or causing trouble.
Making a run for the road, too. My kids used to break out and run for the road. It's like, oh my God.
Mate, you know, I've done it with my kid and I'll hide behind a tree and they don't recognize that they're lost. Do you know what I mean? I followed one and he just was setting up a new life. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was no recognition that I was, that he was gone or lost.
Yeah.
You know, I was following him around like sort of a park and he was on his way.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't once look back to see where I was.
One of my brothers went down the park when he had like a 6-year-old, had a big night before, lay in the grass, fell asleep.
Yeah.
Woke up, the kid was gone.
Oh no.
He woke up, his wife was ringing him on his mobile. Where's little Tarquin? He's walked home. The kid walked home.
Oh, no. That's the worst. You've been exposed because he's got home. Mate, you know what the thing is? It is shocking. I've seen it down at the park where one's missing, a kid, someone's lost their kid, and the panic's there, but then if it's not your kid, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what I mean?
Like,
you're sort of there, then you help out, and then eventually you're like, well, I better get back to kicking this ball. There's nothing I can really do.
But you're also happy that it's not your child, too. You're like, oh, thank God.
The relief, hey?
It's not Tarquin.
The relief. I had my boy at one of the worst moments was like after school he was playing and he ran off with one of the other boys. And then I was talking to the mums and had been distracted and he came running across an oval with his pants off, howling. And I was like, oh, my God, what's happened? And it turned out he had been bitten by a bull ant.
Oh.
You know, he'd done a wee in the bush. But for me, I had that moment of like, keep your eyes peeled. What were you doing? He's run from like random bushes.
Yeah.
You know, like stripped naked. I was like, Jesus.
That's horrific.
My heart dropped. Hey, it was one of the scariest things. I was so relieved it was a bull ant. I'll tell you that.
Oh, my God. Where did the bull ant bite him?
I think like on his sort of like on his hand, like, you know, not on
the,
like, but he ran, you know, he ran with no pants from a bush.
Yeah.
And Jesus, that is the stuff of nightmares.
WA's a harsh country, mate. It's a harsh land. Well, Yeah, go on.
Yeah, we wind it up, mate.
Yeah, what were you going to say though?
No, I was saying I actually did that with him with bull ants. I got him one of those human zoos. You know those games?
The ant farm.
Mm. I got him one that you can put insects in. And I thought, oh, let's rev it up. I'll go down and get bull ants and put them in. And I put him in the car and he started screaming. And they had found a way to get out. So he's got a very bad memory with bull ants.
Yes.
And then he was laid a bit. I put him in the back seat of a vehicle with 1,000 bull ants. So,
Father of the year. Hey, so
I'm not done well.
Should we tell people where they can? Obviously, you're in WA, you can go see Wolfie. You often do the, what's it called? The lounge? What's it called?
Yeah,
the
Comedy Lounge.
Comedy Lounge.
Every week. And then I've got a podcast. I've got one that's called Sure Thing.
Mm-hmm.
That one people like. And then there's another, like, Circling the Drain. That's the one I sort of run. And yeah.
Great.
I don't think the feedback's been that good. But sure thing they like.
Sure thing, is it?
It's a sure thing, you know, and it's talking more about finance.
Oh, really?
And all the anecdotes and stuff that happened in London. And
what are you on Twitter? You're on Twitter, I know. What's your handle on Twitter?
Yeah, man, it's called Dead at the Wheel on everything. Dead at the Wheel on everything.
Wolfie, always good to talk to you.
Mate, you're the king.
Andrew,
thanks for calling, man. Love you.
Wolfie from WA, everyone.